podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's Tour Live. It's John Gibbons hosting this week. I'm joined by Rob Gutman in the studio and also Emma Sanders and Lizzie Doyle over Zoom. And we're here to talk about the Liverpool universe and obviously to look ahead to Liverpool v Southampton on Saturday. But before all that, I wanted to have a little chat about the Coventry report because we haven't done any content on it. Neil has written something epic for all you people who get our newsletters. So that has come through. And if you aren't subscribed to our newsletter, first of all, why not? But also, secondly, Neil's here tweeted it out as well because we've got a little link here. So Neil has had his thoughts, but I'm interested in the thoughts all otherwise of everyone in the room with me. So we'll start with you, Emma. What did you make of it? This fan-led in inverted commas report that's come out, the suggestions, and also of any sorts of conversations that have taken place that have interested you since.
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought it was pretty comprehensive. I thought there was a lot of points that they covered. The main ones being, obviously, I think the point of conversations that people have had since have been surrounded by the kind of the transfer tax on Premier League clubs. Obviously, the calls for an independent regulator. And then perhaps maybe I would probably say that the calls for the equality, diversity, things being kind of mandatory at every club. Those were the three main ones that I looked at, really, aside from obviously the women's football one, which is quite an important one to me personally. But I think the main one is around this independent regulator. I think that's caused a lot of controversy. Personally, I really liked a lot of the issues and the points that were raised. I quite like the idea of an independent regulator, just because I think it'll provide a bit more just transparency, really, and also hand a bit of power back to the fans. And then, you know, there's this whole discussion around kind of the financial sustainability of the football pyramid as a whole. And I think the transfer tax on Premier League clubs, while I can understand to some extent the frustrations from those against it, on the whole, I think it's quite a smart idea. And I think as long as, you know, the EFL clubs and the Premier League clubs can come to an agreement, I think that'll be the best scenario. I think, you know, if those agreements can't be made between those bodies and it has to be decided by an independent regulator, I think that could cause a few issues. So I'd like to see that sorted out, really. But yeah, just overall, I've made a few notes actually before coming on this show. Typical journalistic fashion, but yeah, the couple of kind of notes that I made were kind of the fact, my main takes away from it was that it felt like the fans were a bit more involved with these things. Like I said, the financial stability, I thought, yeah, quite like the ideas around that, the transparency. And also another thing was to kind of help close the gap between the Championship and the Premier League. And, you know, we've seen instances of clubs trying to close that gap and breaking kind of financial rules. And I just think there's such a disparity financially between those two leagues at the moment that the whole kind of premise around closing that gap, I thought, was pretty good. And yeah, they were kind of my main takeaways, really. Sorry, that's quite a lot all in one go.
I asked your opinion and I got it. There's a few things I want to sort of pick up on, but I'm going to ask everyone else their sort of first thoughts. So we'll go to Rob. I'll slide over and Rob will slide in and tell me what he thinks. Tell us.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, we're sharing a mic. It threw me, John. It feels like, and this is going to sound like a cliche, but the start of a journey rather than sort of like a particularly anywhere near a sort of final set of solutions. I haven't read all, is it 167 pages just yet, although we did prep for the show. The broad headlines are all appealing. And, you know, I scanned the media this morning and there seems to be almost a sort of consensus that it's done a good thing, this committee. Like Emma, I was pleased at talk of an independent regulator, but of course the devil's in the detail. What teeth will an independent regulator have? What kind of brief will an independent regulator have? Regardless, I suppose, of those things, because those are obvious questions again. Thus far, football has policed itself. You know, it's been like the police non-independent complaints commission is not an important thing. An independent complaints commission is kind of what we need with football. And if the idea that this could become a thing is an incredible watershed moment, I think, in the history of the game, if it ends up having teeth. I think things like the transfer tax, let's wait and see on. It sounds good. It sounds like a good redistributive, if that's the word, measure. I'm not saying that correctly. But I think there'll be a lot of toing and froing before that's taken as a literal law. I personally have a hobby horse about, I think a lot of football does, about the power of the nation state investments in football and the effect of, you know, oligarchs and the like distorting the competition. And to me, that's as big an issue as any of the other issues in the game. Nothing in this really jumped out at me as saying it's going to stop, you know, Thailand taking over Bournemouth next year and turning them into the biggest club in Europe. I want to know how that's going to be stopped. I mean, I know there's talk about a proper fit and proper person's set of criteria in the regulator's brief, but I would have liked more detail on how we're going to stop that. I want to know what's going to stop Newcastle going nuts in the next couple of years. There was nothing in it today that I heard that directly spoke to that issue. But apart from that, you know what? We've got to be pleased with the direction of travel.
Thanks, Rob. Lizzie?
Yeah, so I think you said before, John, that, like, is this something that we'll be speaking about at the pub? And I feel like not just quite yet. I think I agree with Rob that it feels like the start of something and we just need to wait and see what is put in place, because obviously one of the main points that was brought up by Tracy Crouch was, like she said, she was extremely optimistic that the government would support. And now, obviously, that doesn't mean this is absolutely going to go ahead or in the way that maybe everybody sort of wanted. So there's a lot of things that people are waiting around on. But it is good to see some of the things coming out of it. And I think, like Emma said, the equality, diversity, inclusion was a big one for me. So I'd like to see that one followed up. When I've seen, like, Women in Football have put out, like, a statement on it as well, saying, like, that's probably obviously the one that they're looking at. And again, the Women's Football one being treated equally, like, and should have its own review, which is right, because obviously the money and the disparity between the two at the minute is so huge. Obviously, what Rob was saying there about the sort of money in the game from that aspect, I was actually looking at the other side of things, which is, for me, as a football fan in general, forget who you support, how big, how small. Seeing the likes of Berry and stuff go the way that they did was tragic. Like, that's a proper football club in a proper football town. And, like, the fact that it's just sort of got wiped out and had to start again, it should never have been allowed to happen. And hopefully some of the things that they're putting in place in terms of, I don't know, the saying is more support from the Premier League through the pyramid will stop things like that happening. And, you know, you're looking at, like, even stuff like Reading and Derby at the minute are suffering in the Championship with, like, points deductions, with financial situations there. And, like I say, this is just from a pure football fan perspective, that it's not nice to see the likes of what happened to Berry. You know, I think Bolton were a point where it looked like that was going to happen to them as well. And again, Bolton's one of especially for Liverpool fans, it was a boss little away. It's closed, good stadium. So I hope that those sorts of things actually do come into play, because I think as football fans, that's something we absolutely don't want to see ever again.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point from Lizzie. I mean, I'll throw that to you, in that I think, you know, we've talked about, you know, you read in a report, you read the recommendations, and the proof is almost sort of what happens next. And what I'm interested in, you know, as much as anything, is, well, does this stop the next Berry? Does it, and if so, how? And I suppose we don't know that until we're able to look at it. But there was a statistic within the Crouch report of just how many clubs have gone into insolvency since the start of the Premier League, and I think it was 60 it mentioned, which is remarkable, really. And if we can bring in things that lessens that number and reduces that sort of significantly, you know, that would be massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, we don't really know, you know, the impact that this review will have on that kind of thing. But I think, you know, what we might all be in agreement with is that it felt like that was one of the priorities of the review, was to stop that sort of thing happening. And there looked, you know, kind of, as I was looking throughout at all of the suggestions, there seemed to be a bit of a current, you know, a reoccurring theme, which was to get that money that the Premier League was driving and start to filter it down the football pyramid, and essentially with the end goal of preventing, you know, the next Berry disaster from happening. And yeah, that for me is really important. I know there's been kind of controversial suggestions linked to that. You know, I think the Manchester United Supporters Trust, for example, said that I think they, to quote them, it was a missed opportunity to discuss kind of fan investment and things like that, which was also obviously linked to the point that Rob made in terms of the owners and the type of people that were taking over from football clubs. But I do think that's, those kind of conversations are ones that should be had further down the line. So I do disagree with that in a sense, because I think, you know, as kind of Lizzie and Rob have both mentioned, I think this initial review, it was all about kind of highlighting the key issues for me and what needed to be taken forward. And certainly from my point of view, that one around, yeah, filtering the money a little bit more and filtering, you know, the Premier League's riches as such, was a priority. And yeah, I don't think anyone wants to see football clubs that have got such rich history go down that route. So that was, yeah, I felt pretty encouraged by that. And I hope that something does come of that, even if, you know, the exact proposals don't come from it. The fact that there is a key kind of a focus on it, I think, is already something which is what I take encouragement from.
Rob, if I'm ever unsure of my position, I will take the opposite one of Christian Perslow. Christian Perslow is against this, has come out already saying, oh, we don't need a regulator. I don't know if you're a businessman and a more worldly man than me. Have you ever met an industry that thinks they should be more regulated?
No, absolutely not. You know, the cry of everybody running their own thing is, less regulation, please. Can you just trust me to know what I'm doing? I mean, which is, from a human position, is it, you know, it's sort of intuitive and natural, but that's what regulators are for, you know, to account for the fact that people will naturally have their own agendas quite normally at the forefront of their thinking. So, you know, Jesus Christ, Christian Perslow, you know, if anyone's going to have an agenda, it's that man, isn't it? So, yeah, The problem with us, the regulation we've seen thus far in football, is the FA has been, in England, has been the regulator, effectively. And it is just a composite of the interested parties. So it's bullshit. How Christian Perslow can't see that there's an inherent flaw in that. He's like the police commissioner saying, I think this should be kept in-house. You're talking crap, Christian, and it wouldn't be for the first time.
absolutely. Lizzie, you know, It's interesting. It was something that Emma brought up before, and I'll bring it to you. Someone's very excited to have you on. By the way, Captain Ionis says, great to see Lizzie back. And I would say to you, Captain, you should have checked out the post-match pint from a week or so ago where Lizzie was on the Prosecco, but I do agree. It's great to have it.
None tonight, because John hasn't bought me any.
I should have drove around, really, shouldn't I, with a little bottle.
Should have called it the post-match fizz.
Post-match fizz.
Wait, Liz?
Post-match fizz with Liz. Oh my God, someone write that down. Write that down, Andy. We'll have that. Anyway, I had a question for you. It was a serious one. It was based on something Emma said. I think it was about the idea of, you know, what sort of comes from here, really, and that's going to be the sort of the interesting thing. But there's a couple of things in the report where it's like, well, we'll leave you to sort that, but if you don't, we'll sort it. And I was sort of like that. It was like, hey, we're going to take a step back and let you guys kind of resolve these things. It's in post-match is in the comments. But at the same time, you know, basically, if you don't play ball, we're going to come in and source it. And it has been interesting that, you know, the comments recently that the governments are going to come in and able to sort of impose these things. And it seems to be a bit of a sort of a nice gentle threat here, is that if you don't get your house in order here, we're going to source it for you.
Yeah, and I think one thing, especially off the back of the Super League, that I felt like a lot of people felt in general, was that there was such a lack of accountability. Like, how was this allowed to happen in the first place? And the majority, I mean, I think the majority of people were so unhappy about that, even fans of the top clubs, never mind the, God love me, the top clubs, I'm doing it, do you know what I mean? But like the fans of those clubs who were involved, and then the fans of clubs who weren't, it seemed like the general feeling. I mean, we saw what was, you know, the kickoff outside Chelsea protesting against it. And I feel like having a bit of the thing is, it's just, I don't know, it's what shape or form this then takes, do you know what I mean? Because like I say, it's the optimistic that the government will do X, Y and Z. So like, how much are they going to push it? What's it going to sort of look like? But for me, I think as a football fan, I'd feel a lot more comfortable in a way that accountability is there, because we felt as football fans, I think, that our voices just were not being heard, and that, like, those people who were making the money probably didn't really want to know. That was the sort of feeling I got. But hopefully if there's someone there to hold these people accountable and to actually go, well, you know, these are the people who were paying the money, these are the people who go each week, we need to hear what they want as well. And I feel like that's, you know, a couple of things that has come out of the report, just looking at a couple of the points here, because it was lengthy. So I was just, like, trying to look at, like, the main bits, and I think that was one that actually I'd be quite made up with. But again, I am going to be cautiously optimistic to see as and when that happens.
Yeah, just kind of off one of the points you said there, Lizzie, about mainly referring to the European Super League and the dangers of kind of that failed breakaway happening again. Something which I quite liked in the idea of an independent regulator was this idea of fans essentially having a decision in what competitions clubs could play in that weren't run by the FA, UEFA or FIFA, I think it was. That, to me, I think was really good, because it essentially prevents the European Super League idea happening again without fans' consent. And that in turn as well will hopefully preserve, like, both the integrity but also the financial sustainability of the football pyramid going down.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. From a Liverpool point of view, rather being sort of, you know, slightly, not necessarily selfish, but looking at the point of view of what sort of we want, really. And, you know, players, though, again, not to sort of keep sort of picking on him, was talking about the idea, what, Tesco don't bail out the corner shops and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a ridiculous sort of comparison. And it's been sort of torn apart by smarter men than me. But I think from a point of view of Liverpool, you know, just to look at it from a point of view of, this is going to effectively, if everything comes in, will cost Liverpool money, and do we need to decide, you know, as supporters, sort of what's more important? Is it a healthy game, or is it sort of what we want? And, you know, we're advocating blank checks for Mo Salah, we're advocating Mbappe 2021, and this sort of thing, rightly or wrongly, will it make that harder? And if it will, you know, do we need to decide what's more important to us?
In some respects, John, I'm the worst person to ask this question of. That's why you asked me. So my first instincts are all terrible because I basically want Liverpool to win all the time. So I'd like the main tenet of the report to be that there's a special tax that gives extra money to Liverpool to buy better players. That would have been the key standout for me. And I should add, in all seriousness, but I was being serious. But in all correctness, I suppose what I would like, as, you know, someone who's grown up and in love with LFC and everything that LFC stood for and everything that LFC took part in, I would like a resurrection of the domestic game. I do, much as the Champions League has come to be loved, if we take our rose-tinted glasses off and rewind, it was the Super League. Right, it just was the Super League, and the distortions we're seeing today are because of the Champions League. The Champions League killed the FA Cup and the League Cup, and in turn killed the relevance of the lower divisions. So, you know what? In a certain sense, as well as redistributing money down the pyramid, I quite like to see a chunk redistributed towards. This can sound really crude. Prize money for the League Cup and FA Cup. Make them worth winning again. Make the fact that the Tranmeres and the Barnsleys are in that competition count for something. Make those big days out again. I loved that when I was younger. You know, a big FA Cup away on a, you know, on a muddy ground in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup could have substantially more riding on it in a certain sense, and more excitement in it than a Champions League group stage game. Because winning the FA Cup, I mean, we all know in Liverpool's history, you look at how our granddads talked about the 64 Cup final as being as big as the... And I didn't know when we won the 86 Cup final, it was as big as winning the Champions League. I think that's a good thing. More things to win, more involvement from more clubs, you know? I quite like that to be addressed. That seems to have been a forgotten ambition for football, the resurrection, in talking about the resurrection of the domestic game. But you asked the question, and that's what I think.
I was into it. A stronger domestic game, just to finish up, Lizzie, is something that I agree with, and I'm completely with Rob. And, you know, there's benefits to everyone for that, and not least the England national team. And I think last sort of squad that went to the Euros, there was something like 2/3 that had spent some time outside the Premier League, either on loan or through the academies or sorts of things like that. Really, these football clubs, you know, are producing England internationals, they're developing England internationals. And from a Liverpool point of view, you know, they're the clubs that are taking our lads on loan and develop them and helping them. You know, where would Harvey Elliott be right now without sort of Blackburn? You know, probably not sort of quite at the level that we saw earlier in the season before that injury. A strong domestic game is in everyone's interest, including us.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. As much as I'd love to win the league every year, I'm sure it'd get a bit boring. Well, I say that I'm not gonna. It probably wouldn't do. But I'm just thinking of like the sort of Scottish thing of like Rangers and Celtic, and like it's nice when it gets mixed up a bit. I mean, only today in Klopp's press conference he said already like this season this is the best league he's been in since he's been here, and you're looking at sort of. You know, you look at the likes of West Ham at the minute who were coming and performing so highly, and they weren't in the mix of the sort of the top clubs. And what was going to say, there was with Rob's point about making the cups a bit more worthwhile, I am really, really, really keen on that, because like there's a lot of criticism sometimes of when, you know, football managers don't play the best teams in like the League Cup and the FA Cup because they're prioritising the higher money competitions, which is the Premier League and the Champions League. But where is the incentive to winning the League Cup when the prize money is 100 grand? You know, that's not even half of one of our wages for a week, which is pathetic. And then like you look at what you go into at the end of the season, it's not even the Europa League anymore, it's a Conference League. So all those things, I think, like, make them. But then again, are we being sort of hypocritical by saying, oh, put more money into it, and we're saying, oh, we need to be careful about how much money's in it? I like seeing it a bit more competitive. And like you said, John, you look at, like, the England team. You know, they're including the likes of, you've seen Bamford being called up. We've seen players from Villa, Southampton. There's a wider spread now, and I just really don't think that's a bad thing, bar when you want to buy one of them and they cost loads of money.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens next, but there seems to be a reasonable amount of teeth in this report, and I would agree with Tracy Crouch that if it's going to be adopted, it needs to be adopted in full for it to be sort of fully impactful. But we shall see what happens next. But there does seem to be a bit of a momentum behind it, so I think Christian Perslow and his mates might be in a bit of bother. But we're going to come back and talk about Liverpool v Southampton. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you're going to get two inserts. Now, I've confused myself over what they are, so I'm going to record it separately. And he's just going to be out. I was at an awards too last night. I got very drunk. We won two, by the way, two marketing awards. So there we are. So that's sort of part of my issues. So I'm trying my best. So I'm going to go and figure out what these inserts are. And then we're going to be back in the room talking about Liverpool v Southampton. It is John Gibbons, as promised, with a little bit of more information on the insert. But before that, I just want to highlight an offer that Liverpool Football Club have got on for the stadium tours at the moment. The stadium tours is genuinely excellent. It's well worth going, whether you're in the city and you've not been for a while, or that you are a visitor, or you want to buy it as a gift for Christmas. It is really, really good. I've been a couple of times recently and always really enjoyed it. And even as someone who is lucky enough to be at Anfield a lot and got a season ticket at the stadium tour, behind the scenes, you know, and going in the dressing room and all that is absolutely fantastic. You've done a brilliant job of it with the headsets and everything taking you through. So I would encourage anyone, as I say, local or a visitor to the city, or someone who you want to buy a gift for, to get stuck in and get involved. And it's a good time to do it, because for Black Friday, Liverpool have got 40% off the LFC stadium tour. That is 40% off if you use the code BlackFriday40 when prompted. That is until Monday night. So if you go to stadiumtours.liverpoolfc.com/offers. So that's stadiumtours.liverpoolfc.com/offers. Get yourself over there, 40% off. It's a decent value anyway, but obviously even better with that discount. So yeah, Black Friday 40, when prompted, get stuck in, buy it for yourself, buy it for a gift, whatever you fancy, up the Reds. And now we have the insert, as promised. I spoke personally to Laura Charlton, who's from Cash for Kids, about the Mission Christmas appeal they do every Christmas, which is absolutely fantastic. And more of that, hopefully, to come from the Anfield Wrap. You
hear more of that from Laura. And also Rehab for Performance invited us down. We invited Mike Kearney down to go and speak to them and find out a little bit more about what they do. So Rehab for Performance, myself with Laura Charlton from Cash for Kids. Hope you enjoy it, and then we'll be back with Liverpool versus Southampton chat. It is John Gibbons for Tour 11. Delighted to be joined in our studio by an old friend. It's Laura Charlton from Cash for Kids. They're here to talk about Mission Christmas. So, Laura, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, John. Really appreciate it.
So, for those who don't know, I mean, we've known Cash for Kids for a long time. You know, I knew them through sorts of my old work and the fantastic work you do, but also when we were based at Radio City and we had the show on Radio City Talk, we got to know Cash for Kids as a charity quite well, and obviously the big Mission for Christmas appeal. But for those who don't know, can you tell us a little bit more about Cash for Kids in general, and then also this big Mission Christmas thing that you do every year?
Yeah, sure. So Cash for Kids works all year round. Basically what we do is we fundraise to serve the local families in our community. So we look after families who are in deprivation, lots of families who have disabled children within them as well. What we do throughout the year is we raise money through doing series of events, and then with the funds that we raise, we support those families. So it could be a child needs a new wheelchair, it might be that they need the doors widening in the house, they might need a specialist garden. We also support sports clubs and schools as well. So what we try and do throughout the year is make sure that no child is without, and that's exactly what we do through the run-up to the end of the year, which is Mission Christmas. So Mission Christmas is for families who, without our support, would otherwise wake up without a toy or a gift. There's lots of families out there. I mean, right now, we launched last Monday. We launched on the 15th of December, and we've already received over 18,000 applications. And that's from teachers, social workers, youth workers, all these people who've identified families that are in need. So what we do is we work with a team of volunteers up in our warehouse in Birkenhead Van Hire, and we will pack a range of gifts for these children. So it's around £55 per child. They'll get a small, medium and a large gift, and we'll pack them up, give them to the social workers to make sure that on Christmas Day these children that we support, you know, they have that special magic of Christmas. They can look forward to them presents under the tree being wrapped and feel the excitement that every other child in that maybe their class will feel. They'll have that excitement of waking up in the morning, looking down the stairs, thinking of being a good boy or a good girl, and Father Christmas has been. And what we want to do this year is make sure that every single application that we receive is fulfilled. Last year we did that, and we're so proud that we didn't have to turn anybody away. We want to do the same this year. So particularly to talk to you today about the campaign, but also to reach out to families. So there might be people in the community listening now. They've had a hard year. They might have lost the job. They might be on, you know, struggling because they've been on furlough for a long time, and they're just trying to get back to, you know, back to normal. If anyone is struggling, always reach out to Cash for Kids, and we can support you to have an application put in, and we'll do our best to fulfil that.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I've known Cash for Kids for a long time, and also Mission Christmas, and you've grown each year, but I guess that's both a good and a bad thing, really. It's a positive in terms of you are able to help so many people, but I know the amount of people requesting your help and needing your help, yeah, you know, has gone up as well, which is obviously a sad thing for those of us who sort of, I guess, don't live in that world.
Definitely. I think that last year with the pandemic, even though lots of organisations, they were on short staffed, a lot of organisations and charities furloughed their team, yet we still received, I think it was just over 23,000 applications. The way it's going now, we're almost 10 days in, and we've received that amount. We believe it'll be over 25,000 this year, but we want to do our best, and with the support from all of our volunteers and the businesses and individual schools, you know, our city's amazing. Our city wants to get involved and make sure that no one, you know, the neighbours aren't without. So we our applications are getting fulfilled now, and we're getting presents daily donated to us, as well as cash donations with people who, you know, they haven't got the time to buy a toy, so they're donating online so that we buy one on their behalf.
Yeah, and that is, there is lots of ways that people can support you, but you know, you mentioned there the partners and things like that. You know, you get a big warehouse every year. There's lots of people who are sort of delivering. I mean, this wouldn't be able to exist. You know, you're quite a small group of you, and you get through a phenomenal amount. Yeah. Cash for Kids in Liverpool, considering, you know, there's only a small number of you sort of, you know, involved. But this is because of the generosity of lots of organisations in Liverpool who are able to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We couldn't do it. I mean, we're a small team of three.
Yeah.
We have 15 volunteers in every day. We have lots of businesses who are collecting toys for us now, dropping them off weekly. We wouldn't be able to do this. You know, it'll be around, we expect it'll be a gift value of around 1.3 million that we give out this Mission Christmas. And we absolutely couldn't do it without the generosity of our community, because we've seen that through COVID as well. Everyone just wants to step up and say, what can I do to help? And it's just lovely to see that these people, they're buying one extra toy, but they're making these magical memories for these kids who, you know, you think back to your own childhood, John, of possibly, you know, for me, I would be thinking of Christmas and it's all the innocence and the excitement of Father Christmas coming. And, you know, what did you get when you go back to school? And for some of these kids, you know, when we talk to the teenagers, they say, oh, I just told my mate I got money, but I didn't get anything.
Yeah.
And Christmas is just like any other day to them. So what we want to do is make it so that it isn't any other day. They feel special. They feel proud of the gifts that they've received, and they can make their memories as well. So they can look back on their childhood and feel good and feel happy. That's all we want.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. So people listen to this and want to support, you either want to buy a gift or want to donate a cash amount if they live sort of somewhere else around the world. How do they do that?
So all you need to do is go to radiocity.co.uk/mission. And you can donate online. If you're local, you can type in your postcode and you'll see a range of drop-off points. They're all over the community, so you can drop off a toy or gift there. We've also got an Amazon wish list as well. That's on there, so people can buy a toy and that gets donated directly to our warehouse, so we can pack it straight away for you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that you do every year. Absolutely fair play. It's a huge operation. Hopefully, we're going to come and see it in a couple of weeks when it is all sort of ramped up and that warehouse is turned into Santa's grotto or Santa's warehouse, I suppose it is, and everything going out. So, as I say, we're going to try our best to go up in a couple of weeks and just show everyone in a little video the scale of what you guys are doing. But in the meantime, you know, any donations would be greatly achieved. And as Laura says, it is a case that these kids sort of wouldn't get presents without it, which is a sort of a terrible thing to consider. But Laura, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Back to my journey for Toy Alive. I'm here today to interview Matt Konopinski. Hi, Matt, nice for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So we're in speaking to an art movie, it's called Rehab for Performance. And basically, just if you could give us a bit of an intro of how it all started and what it is that you do here.
So the facility is the brainchild of myself and Chris Morgan. We worked together for probably around 15 years all in various different areas. And we have been fortunate enough to work at the very top of elite football. The majority of the time we've spent at Liverpool Football Club. And we always felt that the expertise, the multidisciplinary environment and the facilities that were available for the individuals we were working with was exceptional and something that the general public could never access. So what our ethos is at Rehab for Performance is making that multidisciplinary team available to the general public in an elite environment so that they can access facilities and expertise that they wouldn't normally be able to.
And what's the biggest thing that you've found? So you've worked at Liverpool for 15 years, other clubs as well, in and around your career as a physio and a part of medical staff. And now you've took it out, as you said, to the general public. What's the biggest thing that you've found coming into the general public's sphere? So if you like, that is being completely different to football, or is there more things that are akin to football that like the general public doesn't really know is the same sort of thing?
I think there's probably a number of areas. One of them is within football, we see a very narrow range of injuries, I would say. At times you'll get something that is out of the ordinary, but generally we see a typical range of injuries and presentations. Whereas in the general public, you'll see a much broader spectrum of injuries or conditions coming through the door. So that's definitely, you know, one of the major things that's different. The other thing is within football and an elite environment, the amount of time that you have to spend with individuals is greater. So one of the things that we do here is give people the option for more comprehensive rehabilitation, but in general, we're probably seeing a client for an hour versus seeing someone for 5 to 6 hours at the club. However, as well as general public, we do have some elite athletes in the facility, and they tend to get the same experience that they would get working with one of these organisations.
Yeah, and you say, so you're now available to the general public, and that's for all, you say anyone can come down with any injury basically and look for advice from you?
Absolutely, yes. We've got myself, so my expertise is lower limb, having come from a football background. We've also got Jo Gibson, who is an internationally recognised upper limb specialist. Her interest is shoulders. We have soft tissue therapists who work in the facility. We have a chiropractor who is our spinal expert. We have another senior physiotherapist. And we also have a strength and conditioning coach who is here full time and able to provide strength and conditioning expertise, which is something we've really focused on in terms of being able to provide the profiling services and objectifying physical attributes that would be provided in an elite environment, and providing that for the general public so they get some real information in terms of their ability to perform and their physical capability, and then they can build on that. So not just people who are coming in injured, the healthy as well, that want to improve their performance and resilience.
And since you said you've been going 3 months now, how's the adjustment period been from going, as you say, to working with someone for 5 or 6 hours in a day to maybe only getting 1 hour a week or so? Have you found that a big change in your sort of field?
Yeah, I found that really difficult actually, because because of my background, my expectation of what I should be delivering is based over a longer period of time. So when I have a shorter period of time with somebody, I'll sometimes feel like I've not given them as much as I would have liked to. But then when you sit back and think about it, and I look at what the alternative would be and what they might have had access to had they not come here, then that reassures me that although they haven't got the breadth of delivery that you would get over 5 or 6 hours, within that 1 hour coming into this environment and the services that we provide, I feel like that will just give them an experience that they may not have been able to get elsewhere.
And obviously you hinted at before there that the fact that you've got more time in a club setting, but in this one you're saying there, like, the quality of the, not just the, you know, the facilities around, but the, you know, the information that is about for people that will come and find out, as you, not just for injuries, but in general health as well. Do you find that, you know, you've got more people interested now in terms of wanting to find out, not just the general people, but other single sport athletes in that as well?
Yeah, so we've had interest from a number of different sporting disciplines, and it's been non-elite and elite, so we've got different sporting disciplines coming through the door, not just football. We've had rugby league, we've had athletics, we've looked to integrate different partnerships. So we have a partnership with the Stephen Gerrard Academy, we also have a partnership with North Endurance that are essentially a triathlon and running group, and through that we deliver workshops, and we have a nice relationship, and they will come in, see what we've got available here, and then they will use our services to try and improve on their physical capability, as well as accessing us for injury if required.
All right, well, I hope that's give everyone listening an insight and a bit of interest. If you want to come and improve your health, or you got an injury, you want to come and see Matt and the team here at Rehab for Performance. They're on the Matchworks.
That's right.
And you've got a website and that people can go and have a look at, and
absolutely, yeah.
Have a ring and sort of see where you can help them.
Yeah, check out the website. We're active on Instagram as well, so all those social networks.
All right, well, thanks very much, Matt, for coming in today, and hopefully see you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
It's a wonderful farce. I hope everyone's enjoying this on the live. This is what happens when you've got a host who's straight off the train from an awards do. But nice one to everybody. Congratulate us. We won two marketing awards last night with the Northern Martin Awards, which was really, really nice. It was for the Feel Closer campaign that people might have seen sort of all around the world, actually. So thanks to everyone who congratulated us. And just rewards for our excellent marketing team, who were absolutely phenomenal and swept the board last night, 2-2. So there we are. Lizzie Doyle, Liverpool Football Club, going to perform as well as our marketing team on Saturday.
I was going to say better, but that'd be harsh.
Better than that. Yeah, you've worked with them. You should know. Better than them. Better than Craig.
They will. They will take inspiration, I'd say.
I think so as well.
I think they will. I think if it goes, God, from anything we've seen against Arsenal, especially against Porto, then absolutely, because we saw two different sorts of sides and both sides played extremely well. And I would like to say, without sort of offending Southampton, that I think Porto were probably better than Southampton. I think it puts us in good stead. I'm really looking forward to the game. And actually, I'm really looking forward to seeing who starts, because like everyone was talking about that bench, like it feels like we finally start to get, you know, a good couple of our players back. But then even some of the performances we've seen, especially on like Wednesday from Thiago, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's had a really good run in the side, really nice to see him sort of getting his minutes. Like, I really just enjoyed the midfield balance, and I'm sort of looking at that. That's what I'm looking forward to, because I'm really confident that we'll win. Not in like a cocky way, just because I think we're playing really well at the moment, and we've got the best player in the world. But I'm just looking forward to seeing, hopefully, if that midfield starts again. And that's no disrespect to Henderson; it's more of a compliment to Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, I'll go to you, Rob. He's got, you know, we talked about it in the press conference a little bit today, Jürgen. He's got a sort of, you know, selection issues that he's not had for a couple of weeks. It was basically whoever's fit and plays, but in a nice way, and that's what Jürgen said as well. Wednesday couldn't have gone much better, really, on reflection. You know, we're not really talked about Porto, but, you know, from the point of view of Southampton, you know, Wednesday was perfect. You know, a couple of good goals, some good performances. Lads came off the bench and played really well. And there's genuine a few decisions where a good player is going to be left out.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that I think that Klopp works backwards from a phase of games, hence the overview show, and all the awards it wins. So I'm looking to the two aways we face at the end of next week, at Goodison and Wolves, and thinking, naturally, you look at aways and you think a more compact, combative midfield is slightly more preferable than one which are full of, so like, number eights and number tens in it. So I think at Wolves and possibly at Goodison, he'd quite like the idea of Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago for both those games. Maybe not that literally, but I think that sort of balance in midfield, which then suggests, if you work back, do the logic backwards, you go a more attacking midfield in a home game against a lesser light like Southampton, albeit a hard-working lesser light. So I think Ox may go again, but I think he may miss out in a Goodison. So I don't know. Fabinho definitely comes back in. Is it Fabinho? Yeah, I think it's Fabinho, Henderson and Ox, and I think Thiago will get his way back in at Goodison.
What do you think of that, Emma? Sound good to you?
Yeah, I agree. I think Ox will play, mainly because I think he's, you know, as Lizzie said, he's starting to get a run of games now, and he's getting a bit of fluidity, and yeah, he's looking good, and I think he'll embrace a game against, again, no disrespect, but against Southampton, who you would be expecting Liverpool to have a real go at.
So it started, isn't it? Southampton, it's where he started.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe he'll get one back on them, but I just think giving that creativity, just sort of giving that license to just, you know, go and express himself and have a real go. I think, you know, there's not too many games in the calendar that you have that opportunity, and I think given the form that he's in at the moment and the run of games he's had, and you know, that protection that he'd get from Fabinho and Henderson, I guess, alongside him, it's the perfect opportunity for him to do that. And yeah, I agree with Rob, like, I think you'd wrap Thiago up a little bit and just keep him fit for those two games. I am interested to see whether Milner gets a couple of games in, just because obviously he picked up that yellow card, which means he'll miss the next Champions League game. So maybe there's a bit of an opportunity for a game against the likes of Southampton for him to come in and just provide a bit more rotation for maybe someone like Jordan Henderson. But yeah, just because Jordan didn't play a full game the other day, I think he'll start with Fabinho and Ox.
Maybe Milner false nine. We shall see. He's got a bit of a decision to make at left back as well. A nice decision, Lizzie. Tsimikas has done nothing wrong. Far from it. I thought Robbo came on like a man possessed in the week, reminding everyone what a good footballer he is. And yeah, trying to get his shirt back in a nice way.
Yeah, and listen, Robertson wants to play every game, and that's why we love him so much. But I think what Robertson needs to learn is he can. Obviously, we've seen it. We've seen it last season, but he's done it for, I don't know, what, 3-4 years now. And I think, like, it's no bad thing that we've got two informed left-backs. And I think, actually, it's at this stage of the season now where I think we're all going to start naturally talking about the next game and about using the squad. Because, listen, obviously, we do have to take a game at a time, and I don't want to jump ahead, but I think probably most Liverpool fans have got their eye on next week. And probably we'd expect to see some of the changes against Southampton with a look to having our stronger squads on the Wednesday. So that might mean that actually, you know, Robertson's still coming back from a bit of an injury. I mean, if it was me, because Tsimikas's been playing so well, I think I'd quite like to see him start again against Southampton and save Robertson for the derby. Just, you know, just in case. That's just me. But I think he's done more than enough to deserve his place there. And that's not me saying Andy Robertson should never play again, because I think he's arguably the best left back in Europe. However, I do think if there is a game where you can then play Tsimikas, it's probably this one at the weekend, because you do have to, no matter what, you do have to keep an eye on Wednesday's game, and then the games start coming thick and fast after that now, so we do have to be smart in our decisions.
Yeah, smart in our decisions, Rob.
Yeah, I think you have to back Kostas given his form. With a view to thinking you're bringing Andy Robbo in for Everton and Wolves, but also at the same time going, do you know what, Kostas? If you play super, super well again, Andy can fucking well wait. Do you know what I mean? This is the whole point of competition for places. You want this kind of dilemma. Let's never forget that Albi Moreno was in the form of his life when he was dislodged by Andy Robbo. He was unfortunate with injury, admittedly, but still. I think Kostas is the man in possession. You know, I think Klopp will think, look, at the end of the day, Andy Robbo is the best left-back in the world, and and eventually Kostas will have a mediocre game and he'll give me reason to bring Andy back in. But I think he's also thinking it'd be a lovely dilemma to have to not be forced to bring Andy Robertson back in, even for the derby. So, yeah, it's hard to call, but if you ask me to bet, I'd go Kostas stays in.
We shall see. There's a nice little opportunity, Emma. The two clubs who are at the top with Liverpool, City and Chelsea, both play on Sunday. Both have difficult games in their own way. City play West Ham, and we know how tough they are from our own exploits. And Chelsea against the resurgent Manchester United, if we can describe it as that, interim manager and all. It's a nice little opportunity to get 3 points on the board on Saturday and put a little bit of pressure on the other two.
Yeah, it's a nice opportunity, and I also think it's crucial that Liverpool don't fall any further behind, because, you know, you look at a couple of the points dropped in the league and it's been slightly frustrating, and yet they are still only 4 points off Chelsea. So not only will it be a bit of a kind of a dig in the teeth, I guess, for those teams that are playing on the Sunday to know that they have to win, I think Liverpool can't afford not to win. Essentially, and at the end of the day, I'm going to sound like a bloody football manager here, but you know, Liverpool have to concentrate on themselves first, and that means that, you know, they have to close that gap. They have to be within 1 point, in my opinion. You know, go before the teams play on the Sunday, because if they finish the weekend any further than 4 points off, I think that'll be a real worry, considering the fixtures that are lining up this weekend, and the fact that Liverpool have got Southampton, and like you say, the other two have got much tougher fixtures on paper. Yeah, for me, they absolutely can't afford to drop any more than 4 points off after this weekend.
Any football manager cliches from you, Lizzie?
Oh God, don't throw that on me. I can't. I'm not a football manager kind of gal, John. Give that one to Rob.
No, I'm just kidding. In terms of, you know, the approach, then you want Liverpool to start fast in this, Lizzie. That you want them to sort of, you know, that's where we're at our best, really. And you feel like, you know, whatever team he picks, and you know, we can make suggestions from midfield, and we can say who we pick at left back. I think the front three more or less picks itself, which is sort of no bad thing. But you just want Liverpool to. Oh, Rob's got his hand up. Lizzie, I'm going live to Rob, who's got his hand up.
Live to Rob Gutman.
I'm not sure the front three's a given, and I'll tell you why, John. I'll tell you, here's the maths. If it's a given for this game, and we mean, by that you mean it's Salah and Mane are playing, obviously along with Jota, then they're starting against Everton? We'd say, yeah. They're starting against Wolves? We'd say, yeah. That would make them five starts in 13 days, right? And I know Mane didn't play much in the international break, but that's a lot. I mean, the hilarious prospect looms of him resting them for the derby, as he has done in the past. I'm not sure. Origi's looked lively. I'm just going to say, I'm not going to be the most surprised man in Liverpool if Origi starts tomorrow. And one of Salah and Mane is given the chance to show what they can do from the bench. So I could see Jota, Origi, maybe Minamino even goes again, and one of Salah and Mane, but not both.
Oof, what do you think of that, Lizzie? Oof.
Whether Rob is right or not, I don't agree with playing Origi. I think for me, it's probably more likely to be Minamino. I think like he'd done a lot of running around on the Wednesday. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to lie, I wasn't overly impressed in terms of, I don't think he was one of the best footballers on the pitch. However, I do think I'd rather see Minamino there than I would do Origi. And it also depends where he plays Origi, because when he brought Origi on, he was playing on the left, which was mad. Didn't play him through the middle. And when, like I said, I think it says on the post-match show, I was like, he used to bring Origi on the left to win a corner, and he went one up and got us a free kick outside the box this time. And I feel
nearly
like...
Nearly
a pen. So he'd done all right. I don't know, with Origi, what you'll probably place 45, 60 tops, and you'll probably have to bring him off anyway. Yeah, he might have the odd goal in his locker. I don't know, but it's a hard one, because Minamino hasn't really impressed me, but I think that Minamino is more of the natural fit. Or... we could see, obviously, if he wants to play Henderson in the midfield, we could even see an Oxlade-Chamberlain up there in that sort of Firmino position, who knows. But I do feel like, I mean, again, Rob could be right because Klopp is absolutely mad, but I do feel like it'd probably be more tacky. I don't know.
We shall see. As long as they're meant to win, we all win anyway. Whether it's Origi, whether it's Costas, or any combination of the midfield, we'll hope for a big Liverpool performance. And straight after the game, there'll be the post-match shows that we do, audio and video, straight from L4. We do the audio in the Glenbrook Hotel, just around the corner from the Kop. And then just the other side of Walton Breck Road in the church, we'll be doing the post-match video straight after the game. Win, lose, or draw. But hopefully, it's a big Liverpool win. And hopefully, there's a big get-in from Robbo to sort of start us off. But yeah, it's a great time to subscribe to the Anfield app. If you want that immediate post-match reaction, just go to theanfieldapp.com/subscribe and get stuck in. But thanks a lot for listening today. Thanks to Rob, to Emma, and to Lizzie. Up the Reds. We'll batter them tomorrow. Sports Social Podcast Network.